Hey, welcome to season three of the Fearless Women podcast. I'm Janice McDonald, creator, host, and executive producer of the show and global champion for women. Thank you for joining us every week as we bring you inspiring conversations with the unafraid. We're the source for authentic, true stories from remarkable women from around the world. If you love what you hear, tell your friends and share the love with a five-star rating. Sign up for our Stay Fearless newsletter. You'll get the inside scoop on all things fearless, like episode highlights, my personal reflections, and so much more. Subscribe with the link in the show notes and follow us on Instagram at Fearless Women Podcast. Remember to pick up a copy of my beautiful best-selling book, Fearless Girls with Dreams, Women with Vision, for more inspiring true stories. It's available everywhere. Enjoy the show and stay fearless. Hey, everybody, I'm Janice McDonald. Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. A big shout out to our listeners from all around the globe. I love having you join us. I'm thinking about you, and I hope you're doing all right out there. Well, I have a very exciting fearless guest for you today. If you look up impressive in the dictionary, you're going to find her name. I'm talking about Laura McGee. She's the founder and CEO of Diversio, a tech startup that uses AI to help organizations become more inclusive. Well, we need this so much right now. Diversio works with clients in 30 countries around the world, and she's been featured at global events like G20 and Davos. Prior to Diversio, Laura was a consultant at McKinsey & Company with a focus on economic growth. Tons of accolades. I'm going to name a few. Named top 25 women of influence in 2017. She currently serves as co-chair of Canada's expert panel on women entrepreneurs. Numerous board positions, including Arcturn Ventures, Global Citizen, University of Waterloo, and Ted Rogers School of Management. And as if that's not enough, she is a David Rockefeller Fellow with the Trilateral Commission. Wow. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So, I love your work. You love your work. You're very passionate about us. Tell us about your role as a founder and a CEO and why you are so passionate about it.
Right. Well, I have to say, I think that, you know, having started this company, my excitement for what we do has really grown. Not only, of course, because you grow a company and you come to feel like it's your family, but the topic of diversity and inclusion, well overdue, is, you know, front and center in the social conversation right now. Mm-hmm. And so we are absolutely thrilled to be hopefully part of the solution and hopefully part of catalytic change.
So let's talk about your experiences as a woman in tech. What's that journey been like for you?
No problem at all. Complete smooth sailing. in all honesty, I think you hear horror stories and there absolutely is some truth to the stereotypes, but I love what I do. I think I have a co-founder who I'm, you know, completely obsessed with. She's a complete rock star. And I have to say, between the two of us, we have just broken, I think, every rule that's been laid out for how to grow a tech company. And we are definitely happier for it. So, for example, we made the decision, we were profitable from day one, that we did not want to raise capital, especially if we didn't need it. Mm-hmm. So we avoided a lot of the, you know, venture capital horror stories around trying to raise and the bias that faces founders. And then we built a team that is super diverse, more women than men, although we try and keep gender parity, you know, in both directions, mostly immigrants. We speak about 12 languages between us. And the culture on the team is fantastic. We really do feel like a family. So none of the, you know, to the best of my knowledge, none of the harassment that goes on and kind of boys club nature. So I really, it's been great.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're bringing so much intention to that culture. And when you do so, wow, it can be so exciting what you actually create. 12 different languages on the team. That's exciting.
It's necessary. I think, especially as we scale globally, we're getting more and more requests for international clients that have employees who speak different languages as their native language. And so it's been really helpful to adapt our product.
And what's it been like having a co-pilot on this journey?
You know, I couldn't recommend it enough. Mm-hmm. I started Diversio. I actually started it as a solo founder. And Anya, my COO, was, I think, maybe our second or third official hire. And what happened is she just became such a part of the DNA of the company. And we really just developed such a partnership that it was really a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back, I guess, almost 3 years in, how much more fun it is having someone who's, you know, in it with you. And I think we have kind of one of those belly aching laughs about once a week. So.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I remember we met just as you were launching your company, and wow, it has been such an impressive ride already. And your bio to date is so impressive. So what's been your strategy, Laura, that you've used in choosing what to get involved in?
That's a great question. I have to say, I'm definitely guilty of saying yes too often. Mm-hmm. I have tried to be more disciplined recently around what I focus on and making sure that it's strategic and complementary. And so the theme that I really have honed in on is ESG. Mm-hmm. So anything that touches environmental and social impact, and mm-hmm. in particular, that double bottom line. So both profit and growth and also social efforts and change. That's really my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it's everything people are talking about right now is ESG. And so, of course, you're going to be in that sphere. You've thought it out ahead. Here you are, someone who worked at McKinsey, which I'm sure was an exciting time. And then going out on your own and then having a partner to share it with. Talk about what went into making the decision to leave McKinsey and then say, now I'm going to jump onto the entrepreneurial roller coaster ride.
Right. It was really, I would have to say there was two forces at work. So on the one hand, I had just wrapped up a study working with the Trump-Trudeau Council for Advancement of Women.
Yeah.
And in that study, we really was all about how do we grow the North American economy through diversity in business, and all about how do we achieve that double bottom line. And what we kept hearing as we did our roadshow and talked to CEOs is that the commitment and the understanding of the opportunity is there. But what's missing is the so what or the how to. Mm-hmm. And in terms of using data and metrics for decision making, there was very little of that. And so it really surfaced for us a clear opportunity to build a platform that would help organizations tactically quantify, measure, and improve diversity and inclusion, and ultimately, you know, drive that real, meaningful, long-term change. So I think there was the opportunity that just was very clear and presented itself. And then on the flip side, I believe anyone can be an entrepreneur. I do think that myself in particular, I really am wired that way. And I think in terms of knowing yourself and what gets you going on the kind of freedom and security spectrum, I am just so far on the freedom side. And so I love the opportunity to really shape the business and what we do and the strategy and the growth plan. And if we have a crazy idea, we don't need to get approval. We can just do it. We can try things. So that kind of personal drive, it just, you know, in combination with the opportunity, it was the right time for me.
Yeah. And on top of it, so smart to not be out there raising, because as you said, if freedom is such a high value for you, to be able to make your own decisions in collaboration, obviously, with your partner, but still, you know, to be able to just choose the direction, how you're going to grow and go is pretty exciting.
Right. And I have to say, that is a message I like to get at. There is not every business needs startup capital. Mm-hmm. Not every business needs to raise venture. And you can be a venture backable business without having a cap table full of investors who are trying to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember early on, we did think about raising and we had a few conversations and we did encounter the number of times I had to really try to explain the business case for diversity and inclusion to people who just honestly didn't believe it. It was just exhausting and frustrating. And so it really forced us to say, look, how do we build a profitable business? How do we build a business with cash flow? And then how do we conserve that cash flow, get creative, get, you know, form partnerships, and then reinvest that cash flow into innovation and into tech? And I actually would not trade. I think if we had had that early startup capital, I think we wouldn't have been nearly as clever with how we built the business. And so I'm looking back quite happy we didn't.
Well, and also if you look at the last year, how business continuation of planning and sustainability has been on the minds of so many, and for you to launch the business and grow it profitable right from the start, that really is the ultimate in freedom.
Right. And there, to your point, there definitely has been a sea change. And I think that's what's exciting and scary about being an entrepreneur is we made a bet 3 years ago that this wasn't lip service and that soon enough companies were going to have to use the tools and we're really going to demand them. And that wasn't, and you know, I can't even fault some of the investors we talked to for not you know, betting the other way and saying, look, we think that this is just marketing. But ultimately, I think we're seeing, in particular, following the revival of Black Lives Matter, employees are absolutely demanding real progress. Consumers are demanding real progress. Investors are allocating capital to companies that show transformation. And so I think over the past year, I think that market need that we felt was coming and we felt would be there is starting to really play out.
Well, yeah, it's very exciting that you took the bet and that you also didn't listen to the naysayers, because that can be sometimes challenging, particularly, you know, in the early days of a company. But additionally, I think what's exciting too is there's so much research, and you would know this from your McKinsey background. You know, the business case is made for diverse and inclusive businesses in terms of the success that they see over others. So I'm not surprised that you're thriving as much as you are. It's clear. And the opportunity, I think, is you're just getting started in terms of the size of the opportunity.
Right. And it's so funny, Janice, that you say that around the data and how clear the opportunity is. I'm a bit of a social scientist at heart, and it's so funny because diversity and inclusion is really a topic where the business case conflicts with some of the worst parts of human nature and kind of, if you know what I mean, so that homophily effect, and people want to be around people that look like them, they can go to the bar with, and it's remarkable to me how powerful that force has been in preventing companies from building a culture that makes them more money. Like, that has just been...
It's bizarre, actually, when you know that it's a true competitive advantage to have all different kinds of perspectives around the table. It's just so clear. Let's talk about AI. So your tech startup uses AI. There's, you know, lots of conversation around garbage in, garbage out, et cetera. So give us a little bit of an overview in that regard, in your approach and thinking and how you've built.
So at a high level, the way that we use AI is we use a particular kind called natural language processing. And so what our tool does is basically analyzes free text data. So sometimes we collect that data through employee surveys. Sometimes we scrape it from the internet, get it from Glassdoor, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what the algorithm does is it analyzes all of that data and creates metrics and scorecards for organizations. And so we have about 27 metrics that we've developed as part of our inclusion framework. Mm-hmm. And so what the algorithm tells you, for example, is one of the metrics is toxic leadership. So it will tell you basically your sample set, so maybe your employee base, is X times more likely to report toxic leadership as a pain point than your peers. Mm. And so what that helps you to do is really hone in on the really specific challenges facing your workplace, or if you're an investor, the really specific risk factors in your portfolio companies, and ultimately then identify the best practices and programs and policies that are most likely to unlock that barrier. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And it sounds so exciting. Sometimes I'm sure for certain companies, a hard pill to swallow, depending on how the info shakes out on their performance.
Oh, it's so funny though. I think one thing that, and entrepreneurship is all about problem solving. And so one of the initial questions that we got was around, well, and you know, you can't fault them necessarily for it, but legal teams saying we have an obligation if an employee reports harassment that we need to do something about it. And so, you know, we're a little reluctant to ask the question. And ultimately what we had to figure out is how do we anonymize employees? Mm-hmm. And the added benefit there is that they're much more comfortable in reporting a negative experience.
Yeah. You get the truth.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That is really exciting. And I can see the uses are just, I mean, for investors too. Wow. I think you're doing such exciting work, Laura. What's something that you wish you knew earlier?
Oh, where do I begin? you know, I'm going to say, how do I put this diplomatically? People have much shorter memories than you think that they do.
Mm, say more.
Yeah. So early on, I remember we were nervous to sometimes outreach to prospects or follow up with, you know, prospects or companies. And we were worried that if we went down the road of one idea and then it didn't pan out, that people would hold it against us. And I think what we learned, I don't know, a few months in, is just go for it. If you have a great idea, just do it. to start it, get people on board. And if it doesn't shake out, people are actually much more forgiving. And it's okay if there's no, you know, besides maybe a bit of a bruised ego, there's no real consequence. People respect you if your heart's in the right place. Not everything is going to work out in the business world.
Yeah, of course. What about the role of serendipity in your life, Laura?
I think meeting Anya was serendipitous. Mm. So our kind of background of how we got to know each other is I was at McKinsey and she was at RBC. And we were separately working on a similar topic, which is the future of work. And then we were introduced by a guy named John Sackos, who some of your listeners may know. Mm-hmm. And we just became fast friends. And it's funny, when I started Diversio, we went for coffee maybe 2 months in and probably sat together for 30 minutes. And at the end of that time, Anya just said, "This is a place for me." And I remember going back, I was incubating at Open Ventures at the time. And I remember getting some very well-intentioned advice. This should not be your first hire. This person does not have the background. And it was good advice. You know, neither of us were technical, neither of us could code. But ultimately, I think it was serendipitous that we came together. And I guess there's some human intervention that we ignored that advice. But best decision I made in this business for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. Following your gut instincts led you to a better place.
Right.
So what do you need right now more than anything, Laura?
It's all about talent for us right now. So we, as I mentioned, we're cash flow positive and we have a good line of sight to scaling the business. So now it's all about getting the right people in the driver's seat. And I personally have a management style where I like to hire people who are really smart and entrepreneurial and give them a lot of flexibility and freedom mm-hmm. and see what they can come up with. So finding that profile of person, and it's funny, I kind of disregard a lot of the conventional wisdom around experience and background and education. It's all about that hustle and that grit. And finding that profile is, you know, that's a challenge.
Well, finding them and then, you know, aligning kind of your interests and theirs, because they're out there, that's for sure. But to get them, you know, excited to come and join your vision. Yeah, that's definitely a challenge. Okay, share a time you were fearless. I know starting a company it's a fearless endeavor. That one or something else, give us the scoop.
Okay, I'll give you a recent example. Mm-hmm. So definitely the scariest thing that I've ever done was start a company without a co-founder. I think that bar none terrified me, kept me up at night, very glad I did it. But I think recently what scared me and what certainly scared my mother is I moved to New York City in the middle of the pandemic. Mm. And the backstory there is I was actually supposed to move to London, England at the beginning of October. And this plan had been in the works for months. I had my work visa. We had been accepted to a program. I canceled my apartment. So we were good to go. And then the second wave hit and my airline canceled my flight. There were no alternatives. And for about a minute, I was effectively homeless. So my apartment had been rented out. I had nowhere to sleep. I crashed on a friend's couch. And then one of my clients actually called me and said, you know, you're stuck in Toronto. You have no plan. But a friend of mine has an apartment in New York that's open and has very kindly offered to let you stay there. And so I got on a plane the next day and I'm literally with just basically the clothes on my back and moved to New York. And all of my friends had left the city who had lived there previously. And so I wasn't really with my family, but I thought, okay, may as well, you know, we just opened an office in the US, may as well be here and start to create a footprint, create a life. And I got to say, I'm loving it. So very happy that I took that risk as well.
What are you loving about it?
I love the energy. I love the people. It's close enough to home that in theory, when, you know, absent travel restrictions, I can get home pretty easily. I mean, people don't lie. There is an energy to New York. There is a dynamism even during COVID-19. So it's great to be among such a really diverse group of people who are passionate and fired up and always excited to get together and chat.
So take us back to the 10-year-old you. What were you into? Were you where were you living? How'd you spend your days, your free time?
So when I was 10, I was a big bookworm. Not a lot of friends, unfortunately, but love to study, love to read. I remember my big dream was actually to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had any idea what that meant. And I ultimately became a lawyer and definitely was not the right move for me. So let me tell you, what you think you want to be at age 10 is not always. But I remember I always loved reading and writing and arguing, my mom will say, and kind of seeing things from the other side and taking your judgment away from a debate and trying to say, well, okay, what are all the options? How do I, let's look at each of them on their merits. And what's funny about that, and I did go to law school and I don't regret it, because I think the way that it teaches you to think and the way that it teaches you to really come at a problem from every angle, not just the one that you're inclined towards, that actually is incredibly powerful as an entrepreneur. Like that ability to see different opportunities, I think really comes, a lot of it was reinforced by my training at law school.
So bookworm, what's your favorite book these days? What are you reading?
Right now, I am reading a book called The Trust Exercise. Mm. It's really fiction. I've kind of gone back to trying to, you know, read some of that, other than I was reading a lot of management books for a while. But it's funny how much you learn. I actually think learning about the human psyche can be more important for business and especially sales and marketing than any sort of business book.
Yeah, I'm reading one called The Chimp Paradox right now. And it's quite fascinating in terms of how our brain works and how to use your brain to the best possible outcome. So I agree with you. There's just so much exciting stuff available. And how do you manage to carve out time for reading? Is that something that you say, I'm going to absolutely protect that in my schedule, or you fit it in when you can? How do you approach that, Laura?
Oh, I wish I could say I was one of those people that reads a book every week, but you kind of go in waves. So I was in Woodstock, so upstate New York last week, and my favorite thing to do in Woodstock is curl up in bed, mm-hmm. cup of coffee, glass of wine, read a book. And then you kind of get into it, and that's all you want to do at the end of the day.
That sounds nice. What else do you do for fun?
I love rollerblading. I really took it up. I'm the most embarrassing when I'm out there, but I took it up in the pandemic. And when I was in Toronto, I was a big fan of, there's a beautiful path down by the lakeshore, and you can go like 20, 30 kilometers. It's great. And then here in New York, I've been all over Central Park. I've been all over the Hudson, all over the East Side.
That is so fun.
I'm a big fan. And yes, I do fall about 2 times out of 10. I take a bath.
But you wear all the gear.
I try to be very diligent. And if my mom is listening, I always have all of my gear on.
So what's your advice for people listening that may think, you know what, maybe I'm ready to make that entrepreneurial leap? What's your advice to them?
Number one, don't listen to any of the conventional wisdom. So anyone can be an entrepreneur. That's not something that you're born with or without, in my opinion. So if you think that you have an idea and you think you want to take the leap, just do it, commit, try it out for 6 months. If it doesn't work, the world is not over. I'm sure you know, everyone has a backup plan. And I know that's said from a place of privilege. Not mm-hmm. everyone has the same backup plan as others. But I really do believe if you're passionate and crafty, you'll work it out. And the second thing is, I would say every ingredient that should have been in place to start a business, we did not have, and we still made it work. So you do not need an engineering background or deep technical expertise to start a technology company. I could not believe that more strongly. And somehow there's this message or this understanding that you do need that. And I think that is part of the reason that so few women start technology companies, is we're underrepresented in engineering fields. So my advice would be, if you know, I'll be specific to tech. If you have an idea for a tech product or company, just do it. Just take the leap, make the jump, and get creative around how do you build that capability. So in our case, we partnered with universities and engineering departments who were very happy to give students and academics an opportunity to work on a real life problem. And so then we built our team organically from those partnerships. So I think my advice is just do it and then get creative around pulling it off.
What about the role of champions and mentors in your life, Laura?
That is probably our secret sauce. So we're quite, I wish I could say deliberate, although a lot of it has been organic. We really invest in relationships, including mentors and sponsors. So we have, I'm going to say 6 or 8 people who have been incredible sponsors of us throughout our journey. And we do everything we possibly can to give back to them whenever possible, and certainly at least keep them updated in the loop. And so I would say the secret for us is being a bit selective in terms of who you include in your circle, and then really just doing everything that you can for those people.
So 2030, what will diversity and inclusion look like?
I'm going to be bold here. I think that we're going to approach gender parity. And then I think more importantly, we're going to have made real, equally importantly, we'll have made real progress on racial, ethnic, disability inclusion, the LGBT community, socioeconomic status. I think what's so interesting about this moment in time is we're moving away from just, you know, who's sitting at the table, what is the representation of the boardroom, to what is the experience of those people in their organizations. So I'm really excited. I think all kinds of benefits will come from that. So for example, I think we will have more products that are designed for people with mental health problems. I think that we're going to have companies that are more inclusive of different ethnicities when they develop movies and even ads and things like that. So I think our world is going to be a lot more vibrant as a result.
Final question. What's your dream, Laura, for the world?
I really like this movement towards, I guess you call it stakeholder capitalism. So I feel like we're in the midst of a really fundamental transition, societal and business transition, away from a pure economic focus to something more long-term and inclusive of social impact. And I think that it's a trend that I am super eager to see continue and excited to see how far it goes.
That's beautiful. What an exciting dream for the world. It has been my absolute pleasure to have you, Laura McGee, co-founder and CEO of Diversio, on the show. I hope you will agree, Laura, to come back and keep giving us updates on how things are going in this important discussion.
This has been so fun, Janice. It would be my pleasure.
That is wonderful. Thank you again, Laura, and we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors, BDC, Lockheed Martin, and Export Development Canada. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to Export Development Canada, the international risk experts, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. Supporting Canadian companies of all sizes succeed on the world stage, EDC takes your worries away and helps you grow your business with confidence. When your business has no borders, neither does your potential. Find out more at edc.ca/womenintrade. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.